Okay, paper 19, section 2, which is old single column, page 215. All right, all you Trinity Origin, soon to be ascending sons of God. Oh. More on the coordinate Trinity origin beings. And as we were talking about last time, when we really reflecting on where that classic origin history destiny line is, you know, here's where it is. It's in the midst of the coordinate Trinity origin beings. There's a vast amount of very overt, experienceable coordination involved in getting us fully actualized as Trinity origin beings. In particular, we have this whole initiation process initiated by the Father that gets us to paradise and gets our initial foundational nature established, but just recognizing what that nature is. That nature is of Trinity origin. We didn't come from the Father on paradise. And no matter how many want to approach it that way, and there's a lot of sort of New Age things and even going way back into historical times, of a perspective like that. But we're welling up within. We didn't come from outside space and time, like the Creator Son, created outside of space and time by the Father. We've never been outside of space and time. We're fully in space and time, and we're going to be there for a long time. To just to finally recognize that our actuality is very much Trinity origin, spread out over this very complicated, long process, evolutionary process. Yes, our personality came from the Father, but so did, the personalities of these Trinity origin beings. Doesn't change the fact that they're Trinity origin beings, even though their personality came from the Father. It's just their personality. Not their actuality, not their self, not what the personality is identifying to. So, that should really, make you all the more interested in understanding God the Mother, the other half of the story, when you recognize that that whole very lowly initial animal origin self that will eventually be a finaliter, that's all being subtly guided by that individuality of the whole. God as immanence, the God that remains within, God the Mother. All right, so now we're ready to do the famous triplet of Trinity origin characters. The perfecters of wisdom, the divine counselors, and the universal censors that we hear from so much, especially as we're reading these early papers, because, of course, an awful lot of them are written by one of those three, especially divine counselor. Of course, there's a lot of divine counselor papers. So let's see if we can get a little bit more on how they fit into the picture. In what way do they embody an expression of the Trinity? And you'll see that they make a definite point of kind of showing us how the three together tie in to the beings that we studied in the previous paper. The Avdeis, in particular, the Ancients of Days. All right, so let's see what we got here.
2, the Perfectors of Wisdom. The Perfectors of Wisdom are a specialized creation of the Paradise Trinity designed to personify the wisdom of divinity in the super universes. There are exactly 7 billion of these beings in existence, and 1 billion are assigned to each of the 7 super universes. In common with their coordinates, the divine counselors and the universal censors, the perfectors of wisdom passed through the wisdom of paradise, of Havona, and, except for Divinington, of the Father's paradise spheres. After these experiences, the perfectors of wisdom were permanently assigned to the service of the Ancients of Days. They serve neither on paradise nor on the worlds of the Paradise Havona circuits. They are wholly occupied with the administration of the super universe governments.
Okay, so just notice how what they're stressing you then. That's you can see they're already foreshadowing what I was saying is going to come. They, you know, they're pointing out that these three groups of beings, by and large, are very definitively attached to the Ancients of Days. So they must have some collective synchronization with the Ancients of Days. That's what they were meant, they were designed by the Paradise Trinity to do. So, it shouldn't be surprising that if some point they explain that, some of the details of that. They are wholly occupied with the administration of the super universe governments. We'll see that the one little exception of a definitive nature to that is with the universal censors, but very much so with the perfectors of wisdom and the divine counselors, you have that fact. All right, and maybe just one other little thing. There's a lot of mystery in Trinity origin nature, and in terms of what kind of an actor you can be in the universe. There's this totality attitude that's always there in the Paradise Trinity, and so. You're creating a uniform set of beings, because it's just the Paradise Trinity that's bringing them into existence. So you have this uniform set of 7 billion beings, but then they get, divided into 7 groups of a billion each, and distributed to the 7 super universes. And they're going to strike step with that assignment. They could have been assigned to any one, but when they are specifically assigned to one of the things that's in the totality of their nature is the ability to really express that super universe's facet of spirit unity. We have this sevenfold individuation of spirit unity. So that unity becomes a relative term. There's a unity in each super universe, but there's a greater unity than any one of those 7. But they're gonna really definitely engage a particular super universe. And so, just keep that in mind as a general principle. So we'll talk about that a little bit going forward. It's not like they made 7 different that the Trinity made 7 different flavors. The Trinity is just one fact. To get 7 flavors of master spirits, you had to have the 7 associations of the 3. There has to be some literal, when there's just one thing, it can only produce one flavor. Okay, at least in that sense. Now, you notice that they're always saying specialized creation, etc. Okay, so there is some. How do I say this? There's some latitude of variability that the Paradise Trinity can manifest when it trinitizes beings into existence. But that's going to be, like you've heard me say a number of times, orthogonal. Independent of that sevenfold that goes around this way. Just like we saw in the central universe, there was a variability across the 7 circuits of Havona that was at right angles, independent of, orthogonal to, that variability around the circuit of the Father, Son, and Spirit, that manifests out in the 7 super universes. So just that points to, you know, there's some sort of a knob that can be turned within the Paradise Trinity that can dial different things. Another thing that you know is you have the Trinity in terms of its functioning. It functions at an absolute level as the Trinity of absoluteness. Okay, it can dial a knob and function down as the Trinity of ultimacy, down as the Trinity of supremacy. Okay, so there's a variability vertically. So it has, there's some ability to vary, which is going to give rise to this. Now, specifically, obviously, we don't know exactly what the specialized nature is in any great, you know, to any great precision. But nonetheless, it's that variability is not that fundamental, the three making seven, you know, to give seven master spirits and seven super universes. That's not in play in the Paradise Trinity. That comes from the Father, Son, and Spirit. So when they get assigned like this and you know that they're not going to be a non sequitur in their functioning in that super universe, they're somehow synchronizing. That's showing you there's some kind of mystery there of the Trinity striking step with what the Father, Son, and Spirit are up to. Even though the Paradise Trinity doesn't literally embody that sevenfoldness within it. So, all right, what else we got here?
Wherever and whenever a perfecter of wisdom functions, there and then divine wisdom functions. There is actuality of presence and perfection of manifestation in the knowledge and wisdom represented in the doings of these mighty and majestic personalities. They do not reflect the wisdom of the Paradise Trinity. They are that wisdom. They are the sources of wisdom for all teachers in the application of universe knowledge. They are the fountains of discretion and the wellsprings of discrimination to the institutions of learning and discernment in all universes. Wisdom is twofold in origin, being derived from the perfection of divine insight inherent in perfect beings, and from the personal experience acquired by evolutionary creatures. The perfecters of wisdom are the divine wisdom of the Paradise perfection of deity insight. Their administrative associates on Universa, the mighty messengers, those without name and number, and those high in authority, when acting together, are the universe wisdom of experience. A divine being can have perfection of divine knowledge. An evolutionary mortal can sometime attain perfection of ascendant knowledge, but neither of these beings alone exhausts the potential of all possible wisdom. Accordingly, whenever in the conduct of the super universe it is desired to achieve the maximum of administrative wisdom, these perfectors of the wisdom of divine insight are always associated with those ascendant personalities who have come up to the high responsibilities of super universe authority through the experiential tribulations of evolutionary progression.
Okay, let's digest a little bit. So you notice there, I wanted to read both of those because you can see they're similarly italicizing there and kind of stressing that whole story. So they keep, you know, italicizing R, you know, so that you know, it really drives home that you... you know, what they were talking about, or what that was implied in the very beginning about that specialized creation. You know, the Paradise Trinity in trinitizing these perfectors of wisdom is somehow tuning its action to this very precise expression so that they just are what they're going to do. You know, they don't have to somehow, you know, be taught it or whatever. Okay, it just literally their actuality is, you know, what, you know, they're trying to express in just the name that they're giving to them. So this embodiment of wisdom. And you notice they, in that previous paragraph, they italicized reflect. Okay, they do not reflect the wisdom of the Paradise Trinity. Okay, but what were we just talking about? They are obviously, for instance, the billion that are assigned to this super universe are going to reflect how this universe is being administered. Well, this is the exact same thing that we recognized when we were talking about the Ancients of Days. The Ancients of Days are uniform. The 21 of them are all the same. Okay? But each of the super universes is getting administered very definitively differently. Because, you know, particular Master Spirit is behind that. So they're doing the same thing that the Ancients of Days are doing. You know, they don't have it within their nature that they're specific to a particular super universe, but they can definitely, just like the Ancients of Days, to follow the lead of the Master Spirit of a particular super universe and go with that direction. So that's how, so they're reflecting that direction from Paradise and by the Master Spirit. And that's a helpful way to think about the relationship between the central universe and Paradise. And what goes on out here is that things are reflected out or reflected in. That you have this kind of reciprocal reflection across that boundary between what's out here and what's in there. Okay? Let's see what else was in there. Okay, and so then in that second paragraph, you see that, you know, that twofold that they're stressing. You know, and reminding you that, you know, and the more that you think about these perfectors of wisdom, these divine counselors and universal senses, the more, you know, you'll be standing in awe of their nature. Okay, they're pretty profound beings, incredibly vast minds. But you're going to have something that they're never going to have, you know, like they're pointing out here. There's no amount of perfect creation or trinitization can somehow manufacture experience. You know, it doesn't matter how infinite and perfect the Father is. He can't make someone pre-experienced. That's like making a square circle. The Father can't do that. If a being is going to have experiential wisdom, they have to acquire that through a process spread out over time and space. Okay? And so you have these beings that, here are the case of perfectors of wisdom, that embody perfect wisdom given by fiat. You know, and then you have beings like the mighty messengers, those high in authority, those without name and number, that have this, that have, you know, been rolling through space and time for ages, acquiring a vast ball of experiential wisdom, okay? And the two come together, you know, and give a complete twofold engagement of every situation. But of course, there's also, if you've got two distinctly different things, there's going to be a super additive consequence as well, okay? You know, and a lot of that super additive consequence of what happens when perfect and perfected come together is shrouded in the mystery of the absentite age. You know, simple little examples is the Trinitized Sons of Destiny, when a Paradise of Owner and a Finaliter, you know, two different, you know, come together, a perfect and a perfected being come together and Trinitize, a creature Trinitized Son. You know, that super additive consequence is basically not of this age. It's so, you know, it's when you're super adding at the top, what, you know, you go up and you kind of poke through the boundary and it's not really a finite thing in many ways anymore. You know, and it's super additive up near the top boundary of supremacy. Okay. You know, never lose sight of that. It's a very important part of the revelation that you know, what we are acquiring through this incredibly long, arduous process cannot be acquired any other way. No amount of infinite fiat creation can bring what you're going to be into existence. The catch, of course, is in the last line. Through the experiential tribulations of evolutionary progression. And that, you know, that word is very carefully chosen. You remember the mode of wisdom parallel? Right. We're talking about perfectors of wisdom. You know, and they remind us there that wisdom can only experiential wisdom, can only be acquired through tribulation. No other way. Any thing that you think you've acquired that wasn't through tribulation and you're calling wisdom, that's delusion. There is no such thing. The only thing that's genuine wisdom comes through tribulation. And that's not something that, you know, a basically naturally lazy and, fragile animal origin creature likes to hear. You know, that's the lot we've drawn in the hole. You know, we have to rise to that challenge that we've been given the assignment, the very difficult assignment, to experience tribulation after tribulation after tribulation ad nauseum. That's our job, to not, you know, look at that in a negative way, to see it in a positive mode. That's very hard to do, but to try to see it in a positive mode and start taking on the great assignment that we've been given, to actualize through that tribulation what no perfecter of wisdom can embody.
I just remember you saying, why do I have to manifest that part of the Supreme? Why me?
Yes, you know, see, and we see, and notice how, you know, we have that song, Why Me, Lord? You know, what did I ever do? We've been singing about this, you know, struggling with this for a long time. You know, the fifth devil revelation is here to paint a really clear, definitive picture of that. Not to make that difficulty go away, but to put it in a big enough context that maybe we can say, okay, I've been given what I need. I don't need to be, you know, a wimp about this. I can take this on. I can take a deep breath, and I can do this. And then you remember, oh yeah, that's what the master was thinking when he said, fear not. He was trying to tell you, you know, you have to just face it. That's what God wants you to do. And you're the only one that can do it. All those paradise beings can't do it. Doesn't matter how much you would like them to do it, they can't. The Havona natives, you know, sit and look at us, you know, look at us, and they go, oh man, if only I had been given that. What a cool assignment. Okay? To have to struggle and claw your way, you know, to paradise. You know, I was born with a silver spoon in my mouth, you know, says the Havoner.
You get to watch yourself deteriorate, literally.
Yeah. But fortunately, see, a lot of those really difficult things are very, very short, you know, periods of time.
Just like tribulations, they don't last. Yeah. They're not constantly pounded on you. You do have moments of...
Right. See, that's why they chose that word. You know, they didn't say eternal sorrow or something, you know. Okay. No, it's just...
There's experiential windows only a little teeny.
You know, they try to really use, you know, vicissitude and tribulation so that you see it in the proper light. You know, don't blow the little blip out of proportion. You know, don't turn the molehill into a mountain.
I beg to differ.
Is it a tribulation to whine about tribulation?
Yeah.
In case you got wisdom anyway.
Yeah. Are you regretting the past, whining over the present, and vainly hoping for the future? Yeah.
Why are you?
Okay. So... See, it's all wrapped up in there. There's a lot of real positive stuff there, reminding you of what an incredibly high destiny you have. You know, even in this first leg, the ascension leg, you know, what you will have once you go out from paradise. You'll have something that is completely distinct and value addable to what a perfecter of wisdom has.
The first item in the inevitabilities is courage, strength of character, desirable. Then must man be reared in an environment which necessitates grappling with hardships and reacting to disappointments.
Yeah, and yeah, we all know that this boils down to those inevitabilities, but don't let the inevitabilities be a platitude. You know, people love to say, oh, yeah, the inevitabilities. You know, they love to just say that word, you know. Yeah, that's platitudinizing it. You know, those are very difficult facts, and they're a core part of the revelation. We kind of know that, but we keep wanting to kind of whistle past them. You know, you know, thinking that they don't really apply to me. Yeah, but they do.
See, this is the wonder of this revelation, is that it reacculturizes you, or can, if you'll accept it, look at it, realize what it is, to put things in perspective. So all of the horrors that we have to experience, and everybody does, to some extent, and they're not horrors. These are just, this will allow you to put that all in perspective. So going through the tribulations, you know that there's a benefit that comes forth.
And there's no magic pill in this life. Perforce you serve two masters. That animal origin mortal self is never going to like this. There is no, you know, special technique, you know, group that you can join that will somehow make that animal origin, you know, creature love that. You know, it's never going to like that stuff, okay? But there can be a higher self, you know, that's there and says, I know this is difficult. I know there's nothing about it that you like. But we can do it together. Come on, take my hand. Small little animal origin child within me. Come on, we can do this. Okay?
Doesn't this look like a nice place to live? More Oklahoma.
Right. I mean, look at the tribulations, you know, there. You know, they can't catch a break. All right.
No totality
platitudes. Right.
Ready?
All right, yep.
The perfectors of wisdom will always require this complement of experiential wisdom for the completion of their administrative sagacity. But it has been postulated that a high and hitherto unattained level of wisdom may possibly be achieved by the paradise finaliters after they are sometime inducted into the seventh stage of spirit existence. If this inference is correct, then would such perfected beings of evolutionary ascent undoubtedly become the most effective universe administrators ever to be known in all creation. I believe that such is the high destiny of finaliters.
Well, they're alluding to that a little bit, what kind of a potential there is in that super additive consequence.
The versatility of the perfectors of wisdom enables them to participate in practically all of the celestial services of the ascendant creatures. The perfectors of wisdom and my order of personality, the divine counselors, together with the universal censors, constitute the highest orders of beings who may and do engage in the work of revealing truth to the individual planets and systems, whether in their earlier epochs or when settled in light and life. From time to time, we all make contact with the service of the ascending mortals, from an initial life planet on up through a local universe and the super universe, particularly the latter.
All right, now that last little bit, you see, it's pretty straightforward, you know, and you like it when they say, you know, they're all working together to reveal truth to the individual planets. Okay, but now let's go back. You know, keep that in mind, okay, revealing truth. But if you drop back, let's see, so the, you know, three paragraphs, you know, the fourth to the last paragraph there. At the end, notice one little thing that I didn't comment on there. We skipped over. They're talking about the perfectors of wisdom. They are the sources of wisdom for all teachers in the application of universe knowledge. They are the fountains of discretion and the wellsprings of discrimination to the institutions of learning and discernment in all universes. So to think about, you know, you got all three of these working together, revealing truth. Their specific focus, what are they, you know, really focusing on? Fountains of discretion. Okay, so discretion, that's in the sense of sorting things apart, differentiating. I think it literally means separate apart in its root.
Separation.
Okay. So they're the fountains of that. They're very much trying to manifest that you can observe that, copy that, strike step with that. So the first thing I have to do is I have to use my individuality consciousness. I can't just use my unity consciousness where everything's blurred together. I need to get my individuality consciousness fully focused, and I got, okay, this goes here, this goes here. I've got to separate things out. And then once I have it separated out, there are also the wellsprings of discrimination. Okay, well, there's another word that my spiritual consciousness doesn't like. It didn't like the whole thing of not being the complete lifestyle solution, and that first part with the fountains, that the material consciousness has some validity. And now my spiritual consciousness has to allow for the word discrimination to be a positive word, which of course it fundamentally is. So you separate things out. But then when you step back and you look at them, you're going to do more than just distinguish. You're going to discriminate, which means you're going to have the insight to really look closely, penetrate into what's in front of you. You're not just going to look at it superficially and distinguish one pile from the other. You're going to use your Holy Spirit gifts, your cosmic intuitions, your insight that allows you to discriminate.
So can you say you're sorting by value?
Well, you're noticing things that are too subtle for just your initial course distinguishing abilities to work with, to leverage off of. You have this ability to see things that others don't see, to notice the subtle things, which are the important things. You know, what's actually true about the difference. Okay? And this is what's so problematic about immature spiritual consciousness turning the word discrimination into a purely negative word, so that you really effort your consciousness away from that. What you're doing is you're turning away from the Holy Spirit. See, without, it's not your intention, okay, but that's the end result. You need to be discriminating, but in a positive mode. The key is not to not discriminate. The key is to go up and mature so that you can positively discriminate. Okay. So, like we pointed out, you know, all three of the cosmic intuitions, they're talked about as a discrimination. Okay. So, work very definitively on reforming your relationship to that word. You know, it's sad to record that almost everyone on the planet thinks that the word discriminate is a wholly negative word. That's a very sad fact. Yeah. And that snowballs into the need for a fifth epical revelation, the emergency that results in. That there isn't any critical thinking in play anymore. There's thinking, but not critical thinking. Yeah. Right, see, and then, you know, you go all the way up to the end of the book, right, and you've got sorter, evaluator, adjuster. What's the first step? Sorter. See? Like this. Okay, and what was that? Yeah, I was just about to say that. Yeah, see, and once you've sorted, then you begin to evaluate. Once, you know, there's the fountains of discretion, and then there are the wellsprings of discrimination. That's sorter, evaluator. Mm-hmm. All right. So, and then and only then can you hope to get to adjuster, which means then and only then can you hope to have some relationship to your thought adjuster that's actual and not delusional. You know, you have to be adjuster-like if you're going to have a relationship with a thought adjuster. And you can't jump to adjuster. You have to start with sorter and go through evaluator. Okay. I talked about that, you know, when we went through that that section in Symmetry of Soul. I mean, and the sorter even isn't even the first step. Yeah. You got to get up the levels of meaning. And, you know, okay, I mean, to get to the point where you have something that's like an adjuster so that there's an actual connection and you're benefiting is a very methodical, definitive process to get to that point. And you need to take a deep breath and you need to start taking delight and cultivating that, getting through that initial bit of progress. You know, and you know, we're back to tribulation then, because the only way to get to progress is effort, struggle, conflict, faith, determination, love, loyalty, and then progress. Yeah. So you have to reach the point where when you're following the truth, that you find the conflict with your preconceived opinions, settled ideas, and longstanding prejudices. And you've got to go through that. You've got to die to that old self that you've been absolutizing for so long. You know, convincing yourself that it's innately divine. Okay? We start out, I mean, everything that we start with, you know, needs to be reformed. There isn't anything that's worthy of being absolutized yet. So you have to be very courageous. Just go at it, not be afraid to start burning some bridges with that animal origin debris. Yes, yes. All right, so there's the perfectors of wisdom. You notice I wanted to kind of, you know, go through that a little bit non-linearly, you know, and get you just really reflecting. Because, you know, a lot of it's pretty straightforward reading. But, you know, get yourself, you know, don't just learn the facts of a perfecter of wisdom. Try to figure out, you know, what they're really up to and how that relates to you. This is what we were doing there.
And there's two areas, it seems to me, that we think of when we think about those seven steps. And one would have to do with, like, can I pay my rent? I don't have a job. I need a job. Another one is, do I tell my daughter the truth or do I ignore the behavior and try to foretell an outcome? That there are relationship problems as opposed to problems with the material world. And I just wanted to say that I think that's where the real discrimination, discernment...
Right, I mean, much more important than a material conflict,
yeah,
is a spiritual conflict. You know, to really come up against the fact that your initial spiritual space inside is very small, very circumscribed, and prone to almost nothing but false tangents because of its smallness. It just does not embrace enough totality attitude to have integrity. Okay, it's very partial. And so, you know, when you can really come up with against a solid conflict with your unity consciousness, because that's the dangerous stuff. That unity consciousness, if it's never challenged, gets absolutized, it leads to nothing but grief. That's Lucifer's, you know, path. You don't want to go down that path of unconflicted unity consciousness. It needs to be recognized for how limited it is and how fraught with danger it initially is.
It comes with adrenaline. That's always the key.
And, you know, and I pointed this out again, you know, when recently we were talking about this. I mean, the moment Jesus saw the slightest little hint of actual spiritual energy coursing through the minds of his evangelists, you know, the first time they had some real success and they were thinking, whoa, you know, this is happening. You know, they were starting to feel the unity in a more definitive way. He just went right at them. Because, you know, the moment that there's something actual there instead of delusional, there is full-blown danger, you know, and he tells them, do you realize you're a half inch away from iniquity right now? You know, now that you've actually taken the first spiritual step, you know, if you don't have full-blown humility right now, you're going to immediately experience a thing called pride, which is not a material word, it's a spiritual word. And he reminded them of that. He said, pride, comma, spiritual pride, reminding them that that's a spiritual word, that you take your animal origin mindal self, and if the first thing that you do with that spirit energy that's above it, that can direct it, is turn that animal origin self into a prideful self, if that's what you do with spirit energy, okay, that goes nowhere you want to go. Pride goeth before the fall. Yeah. So, you know, it's not the material selfish things that are dangerous. It's the spiritual selfish things that are dangerous. Because matter can't direct mind.
What would be an example?
But spirit can direct mind. Just any time that you start to see yourself as the unity, my people are the one, you know, are the unity. I mean, there's all kinds of subtle pride things, you know, or our group, you know, like the evangelists, you know, Jesus' evangelists, our group, man, we are the happening ones. I mean, the unity is us. Look at the way we razzle-dazzle the people.
Is that like too much zeal?
Well, of course, zeal, you know, I mean, pumps that. But just, see, when you bring the unity down in, and you start thinking you are the unity, rather than the unity is above you, always will be, and you must always be humbly reaching up to it and striving towards it. The moment you think you're it, that you've gotten up to it, and now you embody it, you know, you'll do things, that's pride, and you'll change from a faith mode, where you're in a federated relationship to unity. You know, faith and federal are the same root word. You know, they mean reaching up and grasping unity, but it's above you. But the moment you think it's down here, there's pride, then you'll talk about confederation. You aren't reaching up anymore. You're with the con part. You're with the unity. It's at your level. Okay? You know, Lucifer, you know, declared that they were going to have a confederation, that the unity wasn't above them. They were the unity. Pride. And it always, and like, you know, go up and read that spot in there. Just search for pride. You can quickly find it. Or even spiritual pride, you'll go, you know, even more quickly find it. You know, and just notice, it seems like it's totally innocent, you know, and it basically is from the evangelist perspective. But the Jesus' response is like, this is the most serious thing ever. You know, and they're all going, what? You know, I mean, you know, why are you bringing up iniquity in Lucifer? I thought we were just having a happy moment. He says, yeah, but you don't know how dangerous it is when you actually start doing something with spirit energy.
Would it be like when they thought they could heal people?
Well, I mean, you know, sir, you can go off on tangents, you know, of all kinds of arrogance and aggrandizement. Yeah, yeah. But see, you know, it starts with pride, you know, and then it'll grow into arrogance and self-righteousness. And those are purely spiritual. You know, no one who's dominated by material consciousness can go down that path. It's only the spiritual person that can become prideful, arrogant, and self-righteous. You know, so when you look at very materialistic people, you know, and you're all worried about, no, don't worry about them. Okay, the problem is not them. Greed and selfishness don't go before the fall. Gluttony doesn't go before the fall, whatnot. Pride goes before the fall. It's the spiritual people that are going to destroy the planet, not the materialistic people. And that is that's a complete affront to all common wisdom right now. The common wisdom is the opposite of that. That's why the fifth epical revelation is here. Okay? I mean, the problem is not that there's imperfection. You know, like greed and gluttony and blah, 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 on and on. You can rattle off the list forever. Okay? The problem is not that there's imperfection. The problem is that there's spiritually conscious people who think that imperfection is the problem and that it should be fixed by fiat and not evolution. That's the emergency. There are people who have spiritual consciousness who are trying to thwart the evolutionary process, God's way, the stable way, and they want to just change things and fix the imperfection now by fiat, like Lucifer and Caligastia wanted to do. That's the Lucifer rebellion. Only spiritual people have that thought. No materialistic person has that thought.
Like those genetically modified, you know, plant seeds and stuff. You know, that would, and that's trying to
again
above evolution.
Well,
that's trying to do it by fiat.
Adam and Eve are all about genetic modification. The path to light and life is done through genetic engineering on every world. Genetic engineering is a natural part of the process. My DNA was genetically engineered by life carriers. I mean, that's the whole universe is genetically engineered. Okay. Now, in our ignorance, we could do things that might cause us material harm, but that's not dangerous. Okay? It's not a problem that mortal people die. They're mortal. They all die. That's not a problem. See? But if you think it's a problem, if you think that the fact that there's mortality, that there's that imperfection, if you think that's the problem and you're going to do everything to try to fix that, okay, that's going to destroy civilization. You're going to totally upset the whole process. You know, now that doesn't mean you have to, the moment you have that more sophisticated thought, you have to challenge your attempt to think in dichotomies. It's like, oh, so you're saying we should just, you know, not care about the environment or whatever. It's like, well, of course not. I mean, did Adam and Eve care about the environment? Yes. Did they, was their response to caring about the environment to never genetically engineer? No. Okay. they wisely genetically engineered.
Yeah, but they were supposed to do it for a million years.
Well, yeah, okay. Anyway, you get my point. You get my point. Just the trick is to find the wisdom. Okay, let's bring us back home. See, that's the whole point. You think about these perfectors of wisdom. What do they have that we should challenge? You know, what do they teach? That discrimination. Have you taken delight in cultivating so you can discriminate between true and false genetic engineering? Or have you just taken the easy path and said, well, genetic engineering is innately evil? Well, isn't that handy? No thought required. No, it's not innately evil. It's God's way. Okay, but you know, liberty is also God's way. That doesn't mean there isn't false liberty. Yeah. There's true and false liberty. Do you have the discrimination ability to discriminate between true and false liberty? True and false loyalty? True and false, you know, you name it. If you don't, then you should take delight in cultivating. Because it's sad to record that almost no one on the planet has that discrimination ability. They take simple, simplistic, immature, spiritually conscious solutions to every problem. You just absolutize the problem. You know, this is prickly, therefore it's absolutely evil. Then you never have to think about it again. You can just go around with a sign. Okay. It's not going to get us anywhere. Okay. All right. So, perfectors of wisdom are important persons to think about. Yeah.
Two things.
Okay.
It's interesting, you know, at the end they talk about the tribulations that immortals have to go through.
Mm-hmm.
But they do talk about paragraph 2, where the universal censors, perfectors, wisdom, divine counselors have all had to go through paradise,
right,
the Father spheres, and Havona,
yeah,
before coming out here,
right,
gaining some kind of experiential.
Right, they're learning about the pattern universe. They're learning about the source of the universes they're about to go and serve in. That's what all these beings are always doing in the central universe. They're studying where they're about to go at its source point, the origin point. They start with origin, and then they go out and engage the history, see? And we're all moving towards the destiny of the grand universe being settled in light and life. But they all have to start with learning the pattern.
And then the other thing is that there's 7 billion... Mm-hmm. Factors of wisdom, mm-hmm, 1 billion for each, mm-hmm, super universe. Does that have anything to do with the 1 billion systems?
Yes, in the 1 billion pattern worlds. See. See, so actually your two questions were one question.
All right. I thought I'd do two questions.
All right. Yeah, see, that's always in play. I mean, you have the billion pattern worlds, and so... Yes, that's why these are in units of billions. Yep. All right, divine counselors.
3, the divine counselors. These Trinity origin beings are the counsel of deity to the realms of the 7 super universes. They are not reflective of the divine counsel of the Trinity. They are that counsel. There are 21 billion counselors in service, and 3 billion are assigned to each super universe. Divine counselors are the associates and equals of the universal censors and the perfectors of wisdom, from 1 to 7 counselors being associated with each of these latter personalities. All 3 orders participate in the government of the Ancients of Days, including major and minor sectors, in the local universes and constellations, and in the councils of the local system sovereigns. We act as individuals, as I do in inditing this statement, but we also function as a trio whenever the occasion requires. When we act in an executive capacity, always there are associated together a perfecter of wisdom, a universal censor, and from 1 to 7 divine counselors.
Okay. We'll get into the whole mystery of the 1 to 7 here in a little bit. You notice there's this additional complexity going on with these divine counselors. Now, just one thing. That previous paragraph, divine counselors are the associates and equals of the universal censors and the perfectors of wisdom. Okay, there's that tricky word with for our spiritual consciousness. They're equals. Now, does that mean they're identical? Of course not. I mean, if they're identical, some of them wouldn't be called perfectors of wisdom and others called divine counselors and universal censors. So they're obviously different. So this is in a very high unity sense that they're equal. Probably the simplest way in this context to understand it. They all have the same parent, as it were, you know, same originator, the Paradise Trinity. So they're equal in their origin in the Paradise Trinity. Okay, so the unity that is the Paradise Trinity is equal, but it gets downstepped and expressed differently. Okay, and so we've got this some curious numbers. We don't have 7 billion. Now we have 21 billion, so there's 3 in each. That's something kind of curious. So it's 3 times the billion for each. And you don't really know exactly why. Your first thought is, well, there's 3 Ancients of Days in each one, so that's maybe it's the same, and yeah, most likely that's got to be the same reason that there's 3. With the, you know, it's only now it's 3 times a billion instead of just 3, but so that seems to be what's going on there, a similar pattern. So maybe they're. Your first thought is like, So unlike the perfecters of wisdom, maybe the divine counselors are a little bit more maybe directly interfacing with the ancients of days, since they seem to have the same threefold pattern. It's like, well, maybe we'll figure out how that fits in. And then they're pointing out that they work in these groups of 1 to 7, and that's another curious thing, okay. Just like the ancients of days worked in groups of 1 to 3, here you got them working in groups of 1 to 7. So they must be, even though they're all the same, you know, in different numbers, this whole reflective synchronization thing that they do must take on different manifestations depending on how many are in the mix. A lot of mystery there, but that must be what the reason is, that you need 6 of them to synchronize with some things, 4 to synchronize with some things, etc. Yeah.
So how can be a group of 1?
Yeah.
Not such thing.
Well, in a theoretical set theory notion, there is, yes, you can have a set of 1 thing. All right, so now notice what they say here.
1 perfecter of wisdom, 7 divine counselors, and 1 universal censor constitute a tribunal of Trinity divinity, the highest mobile advisory body in the universes of time and space. Such a group of 9 is known either as a fact-finding or as a truth-revealing tribunal. And when it sits in judgment upon a problem and renders a decision, it is just as if an ancient of days had adjudicated the matter. For in all the annals of the superuniverses, such a verdict has never been reversed by the ancients of days. When the 3 ancients of days function, the Paradise Trinity functions. When the tribunal of 9 arrives at a decision following its united deliberations, to all intents and purposes, the ancients of days have spoken. And it is in this manner that the Paradise rulers make personal contact in administrative matters and governmental regulations with the individual worlds, systems, and universes.
Like, okay, some very interesting mathematics going on here. So let's understand this. Okay. We can do this because we figured out the root pattern in play. Why there were 3 ancients of days? It's because there's a threefold actuality. You have individuality, associativity, and unity. You have that basic threefold actuality that needs to be encompassed. You know, and we saw that, you know, along with the perfections of days and the recents of days, that we had that pattern of 3 of them engaged unity, 2 associativity, and 1 individuality. Okay. So when the 3 ancients of days function, the Paradise Trinity functions. The total of the totality attitude, you know, is what's encompassed, around, you know, it's when you encompass the threefold actuality. Okay. What you're striving for, the harmony that you're striving for that will synchronize with the universal harmony of the mother is a tri-unity, not pure unity. It's individual associative unity together as 1, that tri-unity, okay, that tri-unity is of the Paradise Trinity. That's the nature of the Paradise Trinity, that totality that we see 3-faceted in many ways, okay, but it's really a tri-unity. It's initially sort of a biased experiential sense that it's, that individuality and unity are oil and water, okay, that they're not associable. Yeah. But they actually are. The more you take delight in cultivating, the more you come into a triunity nature and a relationship with your origin as a Trinity origin being. See again? Okay. The fact that they're drawing this direct parallel, it's like, okay, I understand what's going on with the ancient days. So if it's basically the same thing when you have these 9, 7 divine counselors, one perfecter of wisdom, and one universal censor. If those nine are just like the three Ancients of Days, basically, if they're encompassing the full triunity, oh, so now I'm pretty sure I know why there's three groups of beings. One of them's got to be individuality, one's got to be associativity, and one's got to be unity. Can we figure out which? Well, when you take a census, what do? You count individuals. Duh. Okay, I think I figured out which one's the individuality. Okay. Wisdom, it's mindal, associativity. Okay. Oh, it takes seven of the divine counselors because there's a sevenfold individuation of spirit unity. They're the unity. So, and see, we're obviously talking about when we're doing something at this high totality attitude level, like the full-blown Ancients of Days thing. You know, the Ancients of Days are uniform. They go all the way around, right? Okay. So this is going to be rising above the difference of unity from one super universe. It's going to take all seven of them to span the full unity. So you have the full unity plus the associativity plus the individuality. And now it's like an Ancient of Days. You have three Ancients of Days. Okay, so that's the pattern. One is going to be dealing more with the unity part of the problem. One's going to be engaging more with the individuality, and one the associativity. And together, where was that? Let's see. If I remember where that was now, where in the heck was that? He said that together they reveal truth. Nah, I lost the spot where he said. Oh, here, the very last paragraph of the previous one. That they engage in the work of revealing truth. Okay. That truth flows through that triunity. Okay. It has to be all there. That's why you go individuality, associativity, unity. You get down to what's the personality is encompassing, the triunity, and there's the spirit of truth. Yeah. Okay. All right. So that should give you a new way to kind of hang these guys in the, in the framework of understanding here.
Okay. Such a group of nine is known either as a fact-finding or as a truth-revealing tribune.
Mm-hmm.
So fact-finding requires the same totality and embrace.
Yeah. Yeah. If you want to. In order to objectively recognize fact, with the first cosmic intuition, that's part of a symmetric three cosmic intuition system. It's like the true religion only exists as a facet of a triunity. There is no such thing as true science, true philosophy, true religion any one of the three in and of themselves. The only reason that any of them are true is because the three are together as one, three facets of one triunity. The facet that's called religion in that triunity is true religion. If there isn't also a true science and true philosophy, there cannot be a true religion. Yeah. So true religion is not, well, I am very, very fervent. Okay? That's not true religion.
True zeal.
Okay. But, I have no idea the difference between, an atom and a banana, okay? You have to have some relationship to individuality. You can't just have some fuzzy unity consciousness about things. That really it's all just one thing, actually. That's not going to get it done. You can't achieve true religion with that fuzzy unity consciousness about things. And when you do try to just live off that fuzzy unity consciousness about things, that's called trying to be spiritual, not religious. Yeah. You know, and it's like, well, that wasn't what I was intending. Yeah, but that's what's going to happen. It doesn't matter if that's, Lucifer wasn't intending to, you know, to start the orgy of darkness and death either. Okay, with the best of intentions, you're going to lose any hope of true relationship.
Can you go over that one more time, this group of nine?
Okay, so, you know, we'll see it a little bit more when we start talking about the censors. But they're the ones that can really zoom in on the individuality question. You know, just, I mean, you know, the word censor, you know, comes from Roman times, okay? And you not only have, you know, what we understand with a census, okay? You know, where they're the ones that are overseeing the census. They also came to be involved in a societal process that led to us using the word censor, like we're going to censor, you know, movies or something like that. Okay? And that's, they became the sort of the moral overseers. And, you know, your definitive objective nature is rooted in your moral consciousness, like we've talked a number of times. See, so it's really the same thing. You're talking about, are you cosmically individuated? Are you a moral being? Okay. Or are you just some sort of, you know, genetic, ethnic, you know, interchangeable part? Okay? So that's why they chose that name. And, you know, when the Ancients of Days are need the most powerful electron microscope to figure out if there's any moral consciousness left in you or if you're iniquitous, who is that giant microscope? The universal sensor. The one who sees the individuality to the core. Okay. Are you individuated or not? You know, and if you're found to be spiritual but not religious, part of the ocean, okay, a drop of water in the ocean, then you're not real. The universal sensor will find no individuation in you. It'll just see the background wash of the cosmos, and you'll be washed back into it. It's looking for, are you individuated here? Have you used personality to individuate yourself? Are you a moral being?
Would that mean there's nothing for the personality to identify with?
No, it can only identify with an individuation. Yeah,
nothing to see
here,
people.
Yeah, see, and the only reason the personality can identify in the first place is because you're given a little bit of individuation, objective individuation by grace, and it identifies with it. And if you choose to blur that out, wash that out, what the mother gave you, well, then there's nothing for the personality to focus down upon. There's no point to identify with anymore. It's not going to identify with the whole. That's called God the Infinite. That's not in play. It needs a part. And if you've chosen not to be partized, you know, to, and then...
And a part you're not.
Yes.
What happens to the personality now if you become iniquitous? Personality.
That purposing becomes part of the Supreme's purposing, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What part of the Supreme?
The Almighty, yeah.
I guess I'm having a hard time separating pattern from an individuation because the personality is not I think of it as an individuation.
No, if there's a point, purposing can be applied to that point. The personality is the purposing that engages that point. Okay? Yeah. And if you've chosen to not be a point anymore, it's not like that purposing. It's like, well, God, I guess I didn't need that purposing. You know, it's not necessary for the whole. No, every bit of the purposing is necessary for the whole. That purposing still has to be in play one way or another. And we've never been able to think about that question until now. Now we know what happens. That purposing gets applied through the individuality of the whole. There's an individual in the, you know, spans the whole, the individuality of the whole, the personal purposive part of God the Supreme. God the Mother of the total finite. Okay.
Chris, it sounds like there's sort of a provisional consciousness that can choose to annihilate the building of this soul. I mean, because we tend to think of ourselves as growing a soul and grasping onto this personality and melding with our thought adjuster. What happens to this thing that can blow that all apart if, in fact, we do become real? I mean, hopefully that just goes away. It sounds like a pretty nasty little being.
Well, remember, the key there is the adjuster. There is no soul without an adjuster.
I know.
And the adjuster is always subservient to your will. You wield the adjuster.
But
it has no will.
Who is the you you're talking about?
Okay,
there?
the personalized you. I mean, not the, you know, the personalized you, the you that has a will. The part of you that's in the upper domain of the hourglass, not the lower domain.
That's who we're striving to become. But who is the you that can choose? Or who is the you that says, well, I'm just going to diffuse with the cosmos?
That's the you that lives in the temple. See?
I thought you said that was the one that can destroy it all.
Well, it is. I mean, see, that's the thing. I mean, so once you get up into the temple, some part of you is personalized, and there's a personalized self that lives in the temple. That's a double-edged sword. That personalized self, personalized by the Father with an absolute dimension of personality, you know, can either purpose that self to eternity or can purpose it out of existence. And it's like, well, yeah, but it's just, I mean, even the upper domain of the hourglass is part of my whole mortal being and it dies. Yeah, but see, the key is the soul, that other self, you know, that the adjuster constructs as a copy of what's in the upper domain of the hourglass. You know, like I said, you know, think of it, the adjuster is a wrench attached to that soul, and you are the hand on that wrench. And you can either turn it left or right, righty-tighty or lefty-loosey, okay? And if you turn it lefty-loosey, it unravels the soul and the soul goes away. And the adjuster can't do anything to stop you. It has no free will. It just goes round and around with your purposing and unscrews every nut of your soul.
Back in where you were talking about the materialist, and I'm still stuck there.
Yeah.
And
it won't last.
Well, we can't resolve that right now.
Well,
but
I mean, that just seems so unreal.
Yeah, that's. I mean, there isn't anything that's more absolutized in current spiritual consciousness on this planet than that imperfection is the problem. Everyone takes that assumption without the slightest question. The fifth epical revelation says no. That's imperfection is not a problem. It's part of a process. It's the Father's way. Imperfection is the Father's way. But spiritually conscious people think it's an abomination. They're without knowing it, they're saying, no, that's not the Father's way. It's like, yes, it is. It is the Father's way. Evolution is the Father's way. Every point of evolution is imperfection. The only point that isn't imperfection is the last point. You're imperfect on the inner circle of Havona. Still. You know, you don't reach perfection until you get, you know, inducted into the core of the finality.
I understand that. Yeah. But the part about the materialist person, what would cause you might as well be a materialist totally and not even search to try to live in the spiritual way if you're more in danger to iniquity than the materialist. That's what you...
Well, see, again, don't think of it in dichotomies.
We need to, once we accept that, you know, there is imperfection,
mm-hmm.
and you know, imperfection by itself isn't the bad thing. And then we can acknowledge that we have the potential to be perfecting, and we have a direction in a positive way. But, and you know, if we can't be perfecting if we think we're already perfected, because then there's no striving, no direction, it can go south.
Right, so that's where I was just about to go with Pam's thought. See, so Pam, when you say, you might as well just be materialistic. Okay, well, do you desire to be good? Okay. To be good is to be perfecting, like Katie is saying. Okay. So you can't ignore spiritual energy and be good. Now you say, well, I'll be good in the next life. Okay? It's too scary to try to be good, to try to be perfecting in this life, because the fifth ethical revelation says that spiritual energy, which I need to be perfecting, is dangerous stuff. So how about if I just never play with it? Like, well, yeah. How does that approach all sound? I mean, you. Why does it say you need courageous and independent cosmic thinking? You have to be courageous to take a hold of spirit energy. And as long as you're humble, that courage is valid. Okay? You're not presuming. It's not going to go to self-righteousness. It's not going to turn into spiritual pride the moment you grab a hold of spiritual energy. It's not going to just go to your head. You have to be humble, 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 humble. You know, just constantly remind yourself that the more that you desire to grow, the more you must humble yourself. Because, of course, you don't grow yourself. Man cannot cause growth. You need to be grown. Well, if you're not humble, you won't be grown, because you have absolute free will. If you lock a hold of it, the mother can't grow you. You trump the mother with your absolute free will. The mother that's trying to grow you is just supreme. The absolute's a lot higher than supreme. You can totally stop God the mother, the God the mother of the finite, the God the supreme, from growing you with your absolute grip.
That's why it's dangerous.
You have to let go. You have to be humble. And then you will grow. All it takes is the courage to let go. Courage to trust. You got to trust God. You got to trust that that greed and gluttony is a process, which works out in the end. If you don't trust God, if you don't allow the third developmental epoch, the material comfort era, if you don't trust God enough to let the process go through that greed and gluttony era, you're never going to get to light and life. You have to trust that that's part of the process, as ugly as that is. All the tyranny, all the gluttony, all the greed, all the calamity of that is part of the process. Every moment of that is innately divine, because it's part... Right, now is a divine dispensation. You can't try to somehow stop that greed and gluttony. And you could, if you just take a totally absolutist, totalitarian grip on things, you'll stop greed, but you'll also stop progress. You have a recognition of ideals, like all the ideals of the Age of Light and Life. What do you do with that recognition of ideals? You do this. Do unto this. That idealism is meant for your inner life. It's spiritual idealism. When you open your material eyes and you look around the world, do you see blobs of spirit energy? No, you see blobs of matter. This is matter. If you attempt material, outer life idealism, that's false idealism. If you try to make the matter, arrange the matter so that it's perfect, so there's no imperfection, that's false. That's the rebellion. It's spiritual idealism. It's meant only for this. Take care of, seek first the kingdom of heaven. This, if everyone seeks first the kingdom of heaven, you'll notice an interesting thing will happen in the outer life. You won't have to totalitarianize it and make it perfect. It will begin to perfect naturally. It will change as a consequence of growth. If you try to change it without growth, growth is an inner life thing, it's potential evil. Yeah. See, so this is the thing. This idealism that the spiritually conscious people on the planet, they need to be reminded that without the word spiritual in front of it, it's false. So all these material things that they're trying to apply their idealism to, that's caused an emergency that has led to the fifth epical revelation being given to us. Material idealism has led to an emergency. Okay. The desire to make this Havona out here, rather than trusting God's way of evolving this to Havona over trillions of years.
One will at a time.
What? One will at a time.
One
inner
life at a time.
Yeah. All right.
Divine counselors are the perfection of the divine counsel of the Paradise Trinity. We represent, in fact, are the counsel of perfection. When we are supplemented by the experiential counsel of our associates, the perfected and Trinity-embraced beings of evolutionary ascent, our combined conclusions are not only complete, but replete. When our united counsel has been associated, adjudicated, confirmed, and promulgated by a universal censor, it is very probable that it approaches the threshold of universal totality. Such verdicts represent the nearest possible approach to the absolute attitude of deity within the time-space limits of the situation involved and the problem concerned. Seven divine counselors in liaison with a trinitized evolutionary trio, a mighty messenger, one high in authority, and one without name and number, represent the nearest super-universe approach to the union of the human viewpoint and the divine attitude on near paradisiacal levels of spiritual meanings and reality values. Such close approximation of the united cosmic attitudes of the creature and the creator is only surpassed in the paradise bestowal sons who are in every phase of personality experience, God and man.
All it's missing is there's no God part in there, see, but it's like we're saying, it's all happening, you know, it can happen up at the very high levels of the finite, you know, around the ceiling, okay, of the total finite. One little thing to just notice in there, not only complete, but replete. Okay, it's poetic, yes, but what's the precision of that thought? So you take these finaliters that the Paradise Trinity grabs a hold of, and makes mighty messengers, those high in authority and those without name and number. Now, normally, you send all the way to paradise and you're perfection, and then you penetrate through the whole seven super universes and get to completion. That second part of the process of having some embodying completion in some way, those finaliters, see, are going to be doing that. That's what happens when the Trinity embraces them. They get the totality attitude. They are complete. Okay? So you have these complete individuals, these perfected and then completed by fiat by the Trinity individuals. You add the beings we're reading about here to that, and then you have replete. Okay, so the mighty messengers, those high in authority, those without name and number, these those finaliters that were then Trinity embraced, and completed by fiat. See, so they're the completion part. And then when he's saying, see, our combined conclusions are, they're complete because of the perfected beings, and then they're replete because of the adding in of the, you know, of these Trinity origin beings. Yeah. That's the sense of why they're using that. There's complete, and then there's what you get when you add something to complete, you get replete.
So it's a super additive consequence. Right.
Well, I mean, here you're just kind of thinking in additive terms. Okay. Combined. Okay. Yeah, there's always these super additive things in play. But like, you know, like we're saying, you can tell they're talking about stuff that's up at the upper levels of, so any super additive thing is going to be transcended, you know, and probably not even immediately manifest. It's impacting the Trinity ultimate in some way and whatnot, you know, But here you're just kind of focusing on complete and then adding to that and having replete. I just wanted you to understand that where that completeness was coming from. All right, let's read through the universal censors here.
For the universal censors, there are exactly 8 billion universal censors in existence. These unique beings are the judgment of deity. They are not merely reflective of the decisions of perfection. They are the judgment of the Paradise Trinity. Even the Ancients of Days do not sit in judgment except in association with the universal censors. One censor is commissioned on each of the billion worlds of the central universe, being attached to the planetary administration of the resident Eternal of Days. Neither perfectors of wisdom nor divine counselors are thus permanently attached to the Havona administrations, nor do we altogether understand why universal censors are stationed in the central universe. Their present activities hardly account for their assignment in Havona, and we therefore suspect that they are there in anticipation of the needs of some future universe age in which the Havona population may partially change.
Read that other one too. Yeah, read the next one too.
1 billion censors are assigned to each of the 7 super universes, both in an individual capacity and in association with perfectors of wisdom and divine counselors. They operate throughout all divisions of the 7 super universes. Thus, the censors act on all levels of the grand universe, from the perfect worlds of Havona to the councils of the system sovereigns, and they are an organic part of all dispensational adjudications of the evolutionary worlds.
Okay, so you can see mixed in there is that, you know, that judgment day stuff very definitively with the Ancients of Days as the final deciders. But let's, you know, look at the numbers now. Okay, so we have this 8 billion thing here, see? So we've already, you know, recognized that this is the individuality component of the three. And so you have a billion for each of the 7, so there's 7 billion. But then there is a billion, you know, one for each of the billion Havona worlds. The individuality of the 1 billion Havona worlds. And you know, they're absolutely unique in their individuality. Okay. And remember we talked about you work your way up, you know, individuality, associativity, unity in the Marantxa, and then individuality, associativity, unity in a direct spirit fashion. And you take that and you go to Havona, and that becomes your new starting point, and you go from that unity up through a newfound associativity to a transcendent individuality, which you achieve in relationship with those, the individuality of those Havona worlds. So, and then notice what they were saying, that this must have something to do with something way down the road. Yeah, if they're already tuned in to this very transcendent individuality that is sort of latent in Havona, that's foreshadowing something way down the road. When, you know, there's a limit to how individuated we can become through a finite evolutionary process. We're going to get this newfound individuation potential when we're given a spirit fragment by the Supreme Being and become a seven-stage spirit. We're going to be, you know, reinitiated by the Supreme Father as a, in a new individuating potential, which is going to be really taking on that potential we're talking about here in Havona, that transcendent individuality. Because Havona, you know, the central universe is, you know, it's kind of an absentite, you know, domain relative to our finite domain. It's a transcendent domain, a transcendental domain in many ways. Okay, not simplistically, because obviously you go through there as a finite being and stuff. But still, see, that's what they're saying, that so important is individuality in this whole process. When you talk about origin, history, destiny, what's your destiny? They all are. You know, not the there is no individuation in the I am. You know, that's just a singular infinite fact. Okay, you need to be part of the infinite all are. You need to be absolutely individuated. Okay, in order to not get washed away in that infinite, you know, cosmos. And so, see, it's all ultimately, even trans-ultimately, about individuation. You know, taking the singular I am and breaking it into parts and not having them mush all back together into one I am again. So, unlike the other two, unlike the associativity and the unity, see, these already have that next measure of individuality in play, which in subtle ways I'm sure, see, is feeding into now. They're bringing transcendent individuality into play with our individuation now so that it has a destiny, you know, an immediate destiny. It's directed towards that transcendent domain, so it has the potential to transcend this and keep going.
And place the thought adjuster there, who's there to get that to acquire that identity. The only way is through us.
Yeah, and so now you can start to think about that thought adjuster. It's like, well, what am I going to do with this individuation I achieve? What am I going to stick it to? You know, and I need to stick it to something that no matter how high my individuation, no matter how high I achieve individuation, what I can hang that individuation on is up to that. Well, it has an absolute core to it. So I can hang absolutely high individuation on it, okay? You know, it's that core that I can always condense on. It's my condensation nucleus. I'm trying to condense in a cosmos infinite, and I need an absolute nucleus to condense on. That's the adjuster.
That all the adjusters are uniform, and the way that they come, the way that they acquire that individuality is through us. That's what I'm.
Yeah. Well, the differences is what we're wrapping around. Okay, but at that existential core, that condensation nucleus, you know, the virgin adjuster, is identical. It doesn't need to be different. I mean, we don't need different condensation nuclei. I mean, we can all have the same dust grain at the center, you know? Yeah, just, it's. But think about there's a core of the adjuster that remains unchanged. You're just wrapping more and more experiential nature around it. For, you know, its experiences and your experiences, and then the two merging together as one experience. It's all wrapped around that unchanging existential core. Mm-hmm. That self-experiential, you know, core that the Father, you know, individuated out. All right, a little more here.
Whenever and wherever a universal sensor is present, then and there is the judgment of deity. And since the censors always render their verdicts in liaison with perfectors of wisdom and divine counselors, such decisions embrace the united wisdom, counsel, and judgment of the Paradise Trinity. In this juridical trio, the perfecter of wisdom would always be the I was. The divine counselor, the I will be, but the universal censor is always I am. The censors are universe-totaling personalities. When 1,000 witnesses have given testimony, or 1,000,000, when the voice of wisdom has spoken and the counsel of divinity has recorded, when the testimony of ascendant perfection has been added, then the censor functions, and there is immediately revealed an unerring and divine totaling of all that has transpired. And such a disclosure represents the divine conclusions, the sum and substance of a final and perfect decision. Therefore, when a censor has spoken, no one else may speak, for the censor has depicted the true and unmistakable total of all that has gone before. When he speaks, there is no appeal.
Okay, so let's digest those two. See, so you can, yeah, so let it be written, so let it be done. Very much so. But, see, so how is he using this totality, attitude, nature? You can take all this stuff and bring it all to one individual fact point. Yeah, he individuates out of the vast, you know, complexity. Yeah, so he has this very definitive relationship with, you know, individuality. Brings it to an individual bottom line point. And just look at that, how that ties in with the bit about the I was, I will be, I am. And think about that when he's working with the ancients of days are making this final adjudication of whether or not there's anything real there. You know, is it or isn't it? I am or I amn't? Okay? Okay? Now, the I am, tie back to the Father, has the personality brought somebody to a real condensation or not? See, he's tied to that question about whether or not you are or not. You know, the ancients of days either say yes or no. No, he is not. There is no condensation there. It's just part of the background wash. And like I was saying, just how ironic it is that horrendous outcome, you know, of you being adjudicated by the ancients of days as being non-existent, and how that can start with a subtle little difference between spiritual and religious. To be purely spiritual is to be part of the background, not individuated. You don't want to be that. It's yeah, but there's all kinds of problems that have resulted from people trying to be religious. Yeah, you need to have the courage to take that on anyway. There's true and false religion. Just because there's false religion doesn't mean that you should, you know, not have the courage to attempt true religion. And you must. You must be religious. You must be individuated. You must be personal. Yeah. There is no that's why the beings on the Eternal Sun's worlds are just a complete mystery to everyone. How they can be real. How can they be pure unity and be individuals? It's not logical. Okay? No one understands them. None of these beings understand that. You know, it's just a concept. Okay. All right. But for us, you know that's not what you should be trying to do because you're never going to get to go to the Eternal Sun's world, right? So, yeah. I mean, that can't be what you're striving for, is spiritual, not religious. So, yeah, just don't go there. All right.
Most fully do I understand the operation of the mind of a perfecter of wisdom, but I certainly do not fully comprehend the working of the adjudicating mind of a universal censor. It appears to me that the censors formulate new meanings and originate new values from the association of the facts, truth, and findings presented to them in the course of an investigation of universe affairs. It seems probable that the universal censors are able to bring forth original interpretations of the combination of perfect creator insight and the perfected creature experience. This association of paradise perfection and the universe experience undoubtedly eventuates a new value in ultimates. But this is not the end of our difficulties regarding the workings of the minds of the universal censors. Having made due allowances for all that we know or conjecture about the functioning of a censor in any given universe situation, we find we are still unable to predict decisions or to forecast verdicts. We very accurately determine the probable result of the association of creator attitude and creature experience, but such conclusions are not always accurate forecasts of censor disclosures. It seems likely that the censors are in some manner in liaison with the deity absolute. We are otherwise unable to explain many of their decisions and rulings.
Okay, just we have sum that up a little bit, those two paragraphs. What are they basically saying? That it's obvious that a very transcendent perspective is being manifested here. They can, dot every I and cross every T in all their equations that take into account all the finite, even the absentite stuff, as you'll see. And no, it's still they get an answer and it's not what the universal sense is. There's something transcendent of those equations, okay? And they're going, well, we're basically taking the whole master universe into account here, and we're still not getting the right answer. Okay, so this has got to be going beyond God the ultimate. This has got to be going to God the absolute. Okay? Or, remember, the way we're always talking about things here from the initial seven absolutes of infinity perspective, when they want to say that, they say the deity absolute. Yeah. That's what that's about there. Yeah, he must be taking into account co-absolute stuff. Okay? Oh, we already noticed that there was 8 billion and 7 billion, that there was a billion of them in this transcendent domain, the central universe. And I can tell you that there are co-absolute things going on in the central universe, and they're tuned to that. Yeah, see? Yeah. They have a hold of the whole thing, and occasionally something from a very high co-absolute perspective manifests as a finite decision, quote unquote. Apparently, finite decision. Okay, yeah, that's what that's about. Okay.
Okay.
See, so there's a way that you can get a sense of, in some mysterious way, those billion that are in the central universe that even the divine counselor that's writing this doesn't quite understand what's going on there. It's a channel, for that which is above to come into that which is below.
Perfectors of wisdom, divine counselors, and universal censors, together with the seven orders of supreme Trinity personalities, constitute those 10 groups which have been sometimes designated stationary sons of the Trinity. Together, they comprise the grand core of Trinity administrators, rulers, executives, advisors, counselors, and judges. Their numbers slightly exceed 37 billion. 2,070,000,000 are stationed in the central universe and just over 5 billion in each super universe. It is very difficult to portray the functional limits of the stationary sons of the Trinity. It would be incorrect to state that their acts are finite limited, for there are transactions of super universe record which indicate otherwise. They act on any level of universe administration or adjudication that may be required by time-space conditions and that pertains to the past, present, and future evolution of the master universe.
See, right at the end there. Yeah. So when they really are totaling things up, past, present, and future evolution of the whole master universe is in the calculation, and they're still not getting the right answer.
Yeah.
Okay. Notice... that you have this, this very interesting anchor point that all of these Trinity origin beings are providing, those stationary sons of the Trinity. The Paradise Trinity provides this very solid foundation upon which all is built. The Isle of Paradise is the one thing in the universe that's motionless. It's called a Paradise Isle. That paradiseness, same Paradise Trinity. See, and they can give rise to the stationary, the Paradise Trinity can give rise to the stationary suns. Okay. So that you have this very rock-solid foundation upon which everything is built. So another way to think about this relationship between the Paradise Trinity and God the Mother. God the Mother, you know, is the God within. But what does God the Mother stand on? What's the foundation under Trinity. God the Mother? It's the Paradise Trinity, see? And its stationariness. How could you possibly acquire peace that passes all understanding? Such placid, stationary likeness, paradisiacal character. Because you have identified definitively with your origin, your foundation, the Paradise Trinity. Okay? You're becoming a little like these rock solid, peace that passes all understanding, stationary suns. In the Trinity. Okay. Aaron, then one little, how about a quiz question? 2,000,000,070 are stationed in the central universe. Who are the 70?
70 worlds.
So you have 2,000,000,070 in the central universe. Let's start. Who are the 70? Of all, you know, of all the beings we've read about in the previous paper and this paper. Yeah. Trinitized. Secrets of Supremacy. Yeah, that's the 70. Okay, the 2 billion. Who are the 2 billion? 1 billion at a time. There's 1 billion eternal a days. And 1 billion universal censors. Right. Just, you know, seeing if you can total it up. Right. So that's, you know, and then, you know, it's a lot easier to get to 5 billion and something, okay? But I just wanted to make sure you could, yeah. So you have this billion universal censors, a billion eternals of days, and then the 70 Trinitized Secrets of Supremacy. Okay, so those are the ones that are there. And remember how they mentioned about the Trinitized Secrets of Supremacy? Not just supreme, not just ultimate, but supreme ultimate, co-absolute, and association. Yeah. See, so that co-absoluteness is always kind of, you know, between the lines here. And occasionally you see them speak of it directly. Like, you need to be able to recognize that's what, you know, the way to allude to that in this initial method of the seven absolutes of infinity is to say, yeah, it seems to have something to do with the deity absolute. That's, you know, look for them saying that. That means it's going kind of transmaster universe. It's, you know, it's getting into that very high stuff. Okay. All right. Well, if you think that was had mystery, well, you know, that wait till we get to the inspired Trinity spirits. Now, there's some mysterious. Yeah, you know, they're right there with the mystery of mysteries, the adjusters. You know. Okay, so that's where we'll pick up next time with the inspired Trinity spirits. Let's take a moment here.